I've loved certain things, now the same things that have brought me joy and peace. I can't even stand to look at them, to think of them. Forgive me if the flow of the writing is staggered, but a lot has happened over the past 24 hours, and I'm still in the process of collecting my thoughts, much more my words. I'm a warden for one of Kenya's larger game reserves, whose name will be withheld for obvious legal and professional reasons. As a burden, I've been in the country for the past year, shuffling between administrative duty to field work with some of the more experienced guys. I enjoy the fresh air, the strong breeze and open plains, and above all, the animals. Mention wildlife reserve to the average person and it conjures up images of the snorkeling big cats or charging rhinos, but not to me. In the time I've been here, the most danger I faced was skinning my all too pale knees on the bark of a tree when I tried to install a trail camera. Not that I was afraid of the animals. Growing up in Kent, Edinburgh, documentaries was the closest I could get to the African savannas, and I simply could not get enough. Between my father's drinking and my mom leaving the family, I found peace in the rolling plains of Serengeti and the peaks of Kilimanjaro, where the people would tremble at the sight of lions and leopards. I was naive and as corny as it might sound. I used to imagine they were my friends. After all, there weren't many I could turn to. I loved all the creatures, at least until last night. For the 12 months I've been here, all of my duties and errands never required me to remain on the reserve after dark. I never thought much of it. I mean, I usually began to work here around 7 a.m, making routine patrols, doing the occasional site visit, hit counts of animals together with rudimentary research for any visiting academics. So it made sense I would sign out well before sunset. Yesterday was different, however. Kouanye, my supervisor, advised I come in for the late shift. "It's not something we normally do," he said. I could hear the unease in his voice. Kouanye was an aging bureaucrat stuck in an underfunded, understaffed job with few perks and even fewer reasons to stick around. His dull, monotone voice had something else that morning. It was tremble. "A few of the regulars on the night shift will be here by 6 p.m. to guide you. After that, you're on your own. But it's pretty dull until morning relief arrives." I agreed, but the sound of Kouanye's voice stuck with me even after hanging up. Maybe I imagined it. I had never met any of the night shift staff. They were supposedly the ones at most danger. Not particularly from the animals, but more from other people. Poachers were the biggest problem around here. Back in 2016, when IS was trying to stake a claim in East Africa, I heard of a few run-ins with a convoy of military who tried to set up a supply line to the northeast of the reserve. But the last few years have been more or less quiet. For these reasons and more, we tried to keep a roster of at least 10 men on the night shift, with an additional 5 on standby. But budget cuts together with the pandemic has forced us to do more with less, meaning make most of the 5 guys at most. I packed what I thought I would need, including an expensive night vision camera I thought I would never get to use. I felt a creeping dread about taking up the night shift. Poachers and terrorists aside, I felt I wasn't being told a lot of what I was getting into, and that made me ask questions I realized I never asked before. Most notably, how come I never saw any of the night staff, since I was the first one at the reserve for the morning shift. I pushed these things to the back of my mind to stay focused on the task at hand. Even though I didn't necessarily have a fear of the animals, it was a line of work that demanded focus at all times. Even more so after dark, I would imagine. I got to the reserve just as the sun dipped below the horizon. There, I met a grizzled-looking man, decked in grass safari fatigues, who introduced himself as Anthony. Wrinkles spread across his face like a map of Kenya. He gave me a firm shake and introduced me to Lumani and Sironga. This was the night shift. They seemed a bit more rougher than the usual day staff. A few times while speaking with the guys, I noticed Anthony looking at me, almost studying me out of the corner of his eyes. I thought it was strange, then realized that being new to the job, he was probably skeptical of having me on as supervisor. I tried to not think much of it. I was a new face after all, and wasn't exactly sure of what lay ahead, but tried to approach it with the same professionalism I always did. How wrong I was. Anthony explained that unlike daytime duties, I would spend a lot more time driving around the trails of the reserve with the other guys in a jeep. Only Sironka would stay behind at our outpost. The purpose of this, he said, was to ensure the animals were, as he said, in good order. This confused me a bit. Usually the animals manage well without our help. This was, after all, their home, and there were enough herds and packs around to ensure they looked after each other. Anthony must have seen the confused look before explaining. Just look at them, nothing more. Don't get close. Even with the advice, I saw a look of concern wash over his face. It was the look of someone realizing that they got the wrong man for the job. By 9 p.m., we drove to the southernmost portion of the reserve. Anthony turned off the lights and killed the engine of the jeep. There we sat in the darkness and silence for almost 3 minutes before I tried to crack a joke to break the tension.
"Quiet,"
he instructed. No sooner had he said that, I heard it. About 100 or maybe 140 meters away was the sound of something, a shrilling cry that seemed to rattle the hood of our jeep. I almost leaped out of the seat before I felt a strong palm grip my wrist.
"Relax,"
Anthony said in the same voice as he would say good evening. Shortly after, I heard a cry of zebras. Only they didn't sound quiet tonight. It's difficult to explain, but it almost sounded like something pretending to be a zebra. Anthony muttered something to Lumani, who was in the back seat. I heard him radio back to Sironka at the outpost.
"We're heading over to the source of the sound,"
he said as he turned the keys in the jeep as the engine roared to life. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be doing out here, as Lumani landed us at last as we drove towards the strange sounds. We stopped and killed the lights and engine of the jeep before venturing through the narrow dirt track lined with dry shrubs.
"Have you ever used a gun before?"
Anthony asked. I struggled to answer it. My work never required it. I was a field researcher after all.
"Forget it, just stay close to us,"
he coldly instructed. After about 5 minutes of walking, we came to a clearing, and that's where I saw them. A herd of zebras, only not quite. Between the darkness and poor vision of the night, my brain hurt trying to make sense of what I saw before me. Zebras, or what looked like zebras. They looked corrupted. I saw a zebra with a pair of human eyes and a mouth that seemed too big for any animal. His lips peeled back into an unnatural grin. His eyes, I felt his gaze settle on me and a cold, hot burning on me. There were others. Another zebra's mouth opened up, not on his head where it should be, but beneath his neck, his head hanging limply behind like some abominable Pez dispenser. A headless zebra strutted along calmly as another walked upright on two legs, like a human. I felt a chill seeing this. My dinner churned in my stomach seeing this and hearing their laughs and noises. Suddenly Anthony's voice shook me.
"Don't take your eyes off of us,"
he scolded, but before I could obey, I heard a noise behind me. I whipped around to see what it was, only to find nothing. In the time it took me to do that, Anthony and Lomani were gone. It was impossible. They were an arm's length away from me, and I only turned for a second, maybe less, yet they were nowhere to be seen. I saw the things strutting towards me, and ran. The flow of my headlights barely lighting the way across dirt and rocks as I ran across the savannah. What the fuck did I get myself into? I tried to retrace my steps back to the jeep, but it was no use. Between the running and the darkness, I was perfect lost. My legs were burning, my chest hurt. What were those things? I felt like I was being punished. I felt for my radio, only to realize it fell out. I avoided the trees, knowing that's where the lepers on the plains took their rest, and I didn't want to replace one problem with another. I ducked behind a nearby shrub, hoping to wait out what I saw. After a short while, I heard my name. I knew Sironka would have came to check on us. I was about to climb out of the shrubs when something seemed off. I wasn't being called by the name I introduced myself to Sironka and the other guys. I was being called by my other name, my real name. Then I realized the voice calling me didn't sound like Sironka's. In fact, it didn't even sound Kenyan. It sounded British, and I knew whose voice it belonged to. Only the owner of the voice has been dead for years and buried in a British cemetery. It is slurred with the sound of a man who had won too many scotch on the rocks, all while I hid from it in the bushes of a Kenyan savannah, the same way I hid from him when I was a child under my bed. A giraffe, only it wasn't really a giraffe. Head sailing much longer than even a giraffe's head had any right being. Both eyes missing, calling my name in the cold night. I felt a shudder quake across my body as this unnatural abomination trotted mere feet from me, calling my name. I must have fell asleep in the bushes, because when I woke up, the sun's rays were beginning to creep from over the horizon. I never felt so relieved before in my life. In the distance, I saw the jeep and made a run for it. But by the time the few animals I did glimpse seemed to be normal, I didn't take any chances as I pushed the gas back to the outpost where I was prepared to give a proper scolding to Sironka for not following the proper SOPs when it came to missing his staff. Only no one was there. No Sironka, and certainly no Anthony or Lomani. I dialed Komanya immediately, and he along with a few other senior officials visited the area within the hour. We alerted the proper authorities and I gave my statement to everyone who asked. I haven't been given the full picture as yet. To be honest, I don't even know if I want the full picture on what happened on that night. Those animals, whatever they are, they were corrupted or worse yet. That's what they always were when the lights went out.